You're listening to The Us Too Show, a podcast where you can listen, learn, and be inspired by professionals. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Stephanie Saunders. On The Us Too Show, I interview some of the world's number one experts. My goal is to help you by giving you a glimpse inside the climb to their success and give you a sneak peek into our guests' behind-the-scenes stories to help shed light on the journey. After each episode, you should have actionable steps to apply on your road to building your empire. Expect to hear from real estate moguls, founders, CEOs, authors, and influencers. Let's get started. Carol, thank you for being on the Us Too Show. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So you have been quite the buzz for a bit now, and you were on, you know, Netflix. There's all kinds of music out about you. And I listened to your story on Clubhouse recently, and I really appreciated the perspective of, you know, trying to get your side of the story more understood. So before we get into that, I just wanted to ask you a couple of things about how you really started your Big Cat Rescue Foundation. What was the beginning of that venture like?
I had always thought that I wanted to protect domestic cats and kittens from being killed in shelters due to overpopulation through aggressive spay and neuter programs. And so I became a workaholic trying to put away money to do that. But when I was 17, I was asked by a veterinarian who was treating a bobcat that had been hit by a car if I would be willing to take the cat home for rehab and then release it once the cat was back in fighting shape. And so I was willing to do that. And let me tell you, there's nothing on this planet tougher than a bobcat. They are just amazing and vicious. And so I came to really love that tenacity and their little personalities. And I love being able to return a cat to the wild. Unfortunately, if the cat isn't born in the wild, you can't release it into the wild. But these cats were cats that I could release. And then by the time I was in my 30s, I was at an exotic animal auction buying llamas for our real estate business, where we would turn them loose and they would graze about eye level. And a man came in with a six-month-old bobcat who was just terrified. He said his wife didn't want her anymore because she was becoming a bobcat. And the guy next to me started bidding. And so I leaned over and I said, when that cat grows up, she is going to tear your face off. And he said, I'm a taxidermist. I'm just going to club her in the head in the parking lot and make a den decoration out of her. And so I started crying and my husband started bidding. And we probably paid more for that bobcat than anybody's ever paid for a bobcat. But she was not going to get clubbed in the head in the parking lot. She was declawed, so we couldn't release her. Plus, she'd been born in captivity, so I couldn't release her. And she was a horrific house pet. She would chase our German Shepherd all over the place. She terrorized my daughter and my husband. And instead of my husband thinking, wow, this was a really bad idea, he decided that he wanted to get somebody that she could grow up with that could take on all of her energy and exuberance for life. And he called around and this guy said that he would sell us kittens, but we had to come to his place personally in Minnesota. So we drove up there. My daughter was 12 years old at the time. And when we got there, it turned out to be a fur farm. And they were raising cats for the fur industry. They would sell some of them as pets because they could get a higher price and then slaughter the rest of them as they became about a year, year and a half old. And so I started crying again. And my husband said, how much for every cat here? And we came home with 56 bobcats and lynx. The following year, we rescued 28. The following year, 22. And by this time, we had gotten all of the cats out of all of the fur farms in the United States, and we're starting to work on getting them out of the Canadian fur farms when I lost my husband in 97. So that's a very long explanation of how we got started. But then people started calling and saying, would you take my tiger? Would you take my lion? And I'm thinking, what are people doing with these animals? Right. So I really thought I could fix these problems, you know, like that. Turns out it's been almost 30 years. I'm still trying to fix those problems and get back to my real mission, which are domestic cats.
Wow. I mean, that's intense. I don't even know that anyone really knows the story about you. You know, I think it's fascinating that you started from this place, but how do you think it got so twisted? You know, like when that whole Netflix thing came out with Tiger Kingdom, like it just, I don't know. It seemed like they were trying to portray you as someone who wasn't trying to do good. Why do you think it got so convoluted?
You know, my story has always been out there in the public. We've had as many as 2,000 media pieces that come out each year about the sanctuary, but none of that could compare to something like 68 million people watching the same show all at the same time while they were in lockdown. So it was a perfect storm that created this intense hatred for me based on the way that I was portrayed in Tiger King. As far as why they did that, I don't know, because they told me they were working on what would be the Blackfish for big cats. Did you see Blackfish?
No.
It was a program. It was a documentary that they did that showed how cruel it is to steal these baby orcas, killer whales, away from their family pods and then put them in these seaquariums and swimming around in a tank and doing these stupid shows where people ride on their back and do all that kind of stuff. And when the public saw how cruel that is and how these animals suffer and die in captivity, they wouldn't support that anymore. And SeaWorld just about went under. And they had to change their practices. They had to stop taking animals from the wild and breeding them for life in confined swimming pools. Right. And so that's what we thought we were working on for 5 years.
Wow. Yeah. So they really like baited and switched it on you. Like, that's crazy. So you didn't even really know what was about to happen.
Oh, we had no idea. In fact, when the teasers came out before Tiger King aired, you know how they prep it for like a week or so in advance. Everybody in the film industry knows each other and they know what projects each other's working on. You know, they try to hide it from each other, but they know. Yeah. And so we contacted the producers and we're like, who's working on that? What is that? Right. How do they have video of us in that thing? Because it was just nothing like what they said they were working on.
Wow. So what have you done about that since? Were there any legal recourses you could take to protect yourself?
I understand that there's 4 years that you can bring a lawsuit. And so we are certainly looking at all of those options.
Right.
We just kept thinking as we were binge watching it like everybody else did, that they would at the end tell the truth.
Right.
And because there had been a podcast that came out the year before and it had followed the same format. And it's actually the one that Kate McKinnon is following as her guide for what she's doing is what they say in the news. I haven't talked to her. But in that, the reporter wanted people to go on this journey that he went on, thinking that Joe was a good person and that he was doing work for conservation and all of these things, because he's a very charming individual. And then he started investigating and actually looking into the truth behind all of it. And so his last episode in his podcast was to say, but here's what I learned to be the truth. And then he laid out the truth on all of these issues. Tiger King never got there. And now they're talking about doing a season two. And it's like, are they ever going to get there? Is that ever going to be their thing? Or did they figure out that this was so lucrative and got them so much attention that they'll just keep doing the same tabloid trash that they did the first time around?
Right. And I want to just say that I feel a lot of people that may listen to this from my audience, my husband included, really, never watched Tiger King. So they don't even actually know, but they've heard the songs and the quick little catchphrases with your name in it, right? But so they don't have a clue what exactly. Right. You know, and it's unfortunate because there's a lot of, I feel like you're someone who's trying to do good for a cause, right? You know, like we, small time, we started a foundation during the pandemic. Any way that you can try to give back is great. And if you have something you're passionate about, I admire that, really. But I think there's still like many people that don't understand what exactly went on. So I thank you for sharing, you know, why you do this. I want to get to where you're trying to go now, but could you talk a little bit about what your relationship was with, you know, our buddy there, Mr. Tiger King, and why was there such, I'm sure people want to talk to you about this a lot, but why was there so much hostility there? Was that real or was that just publicity?
Well, the whole premise of Tiger King was that there was this feud, and I've heard so many people in the press refer to it as a feud, but a feud is where you've got two people fighting with each other and you think of Hatfields and McCoys, and it's just, you know, where they've gone at each other so long they've forgotten what they were originally fighting about, kind of a thing. And it was never that way with us. I've never said anything nasty about him personally. I've never taken any pot shots at him. And so, you know, my first exposure to him was in 2004. I didn't even remember this. It was in that podcast I was telling you about that Wondery did. The reporter found the article and he said, well, he asked me, when was the first time you remember Joe Exotic? And I said, probably around 2009, 2010. And he said, well, actually, you were quoted in an article in 2004, and that's what started him hating you so much. So apparently, the Oklahoman had done an article about a lion cub that he had born that was very deformed because he was doing so much inbreeding. Right. And the reporter reached out to me and said, what do you think about this? And at the time, Joe was calling his place a sanctuary. And I had never heard of him before. And I said, well, first of all, sanctuaries don't breed cats, so it can't be a sanctuary. That's all I said. And that was in the paper. And that just apparently caused Joe to just lose his mind. I mean, he could not believe somebody was saying that he wasn't a sanctuary because he was breeding. And that's the very premise of a sanctuary. Sanctuaries do not buy or breed, sell. They don't allow the public to touch the animals. And they don't take them off site like malls and rodeos. Whereas zoos do all of those things, which is what he was, a zoo. He wasn't a sanctuary. So apparently from that point forward, my name was on his lips just constantly. And all of the people that work with him say that he was just absolutely obsessed with me from that point forward and was just looking for any way he could possibly trash my reputation. And all of these people that abuse big cats, whenever I do hear about things that they're doing that are harmful or if they end up in trouble with the law, I created a website called 911animalabuse.com. And what happens is they change the people doing these kinds of exploitive things, keep changing their names so that if you're having them come to your venue and you look up Amazing Awakenings as one of his names, then you won't find any of his citations or any of his violations of the law because that's not really his name. And so it wasn't until 2009 or 2010 that I realized there were 21 of these organizations that I had been putting into the 911 database that were all Joe. So wow. When I figured that out and I put them all on one page and I said, okay, here's Joe Schreibogel and all of these names, if you're looking these names up, it's that guy who has like 300 citations against him.
Wow.
And so, of course, that did not make him like me very much. But I do that with all of the animal abusers. Right. And that's why they all hate me.
Right.
And there's no excuse for what they do. They'll try to tell you that it's conservation and that makes people care about these animals, which is just a lie. So if they can say, oh, did you know she killed her husband? That just deflects the attention right off of them because people think that is just such a juicy story. They can't wait to hear more of that crap, which is right. Absolutely untrue. But it's what they need. They need something to get the attention off of their bad deeds. And so that's what they've used for all of these years since my husband walked out the door one day and never came back.
Right. And you think about what you just said and like the way publicity is used, right? We all like drama. You know, so, but if you think about the reality there, you just said you have someone like Joe Exotic. If you watch the Netflix series, Tiger King, it's devastating to see what's happening there. And then you still have all these people who just absolutely love him because of this character. But in reality, it's like a deflection completely because no one's actually even paying attention to what's happening here. It's terrible.
You know, I think it's interesting that so many of the people who abuse big cats are magicians. And if you think about, you know, Siegfried and Roy and Jay Owenhauser and Joe Exotic, the whole thing behind magic is the art of deception and deflection and diverting somebody's attention to something else while you're really doing something over here. And so it's just so ironic to me that so many of them are in that industry.
Right. No, and I think that you definitely deserve for people to understand your story and what your mission is. So what is the future of Big Cats Rescue? What are you currently planning on doing or what are you trying to accomplish?
The goal of Big Cat Rescue has always been to put ourselves out of business. You know, all the people in Tiger King were saying she wants to be the last person with big cats. And it's like, I don't want to have any big cats. That's the most painful part of my life is to see those cats in cages, but they can't be set free because they were born in cages. And so my mission is a world where all wild cats live free. And everything that I can do to end the abuse of big cats in time to save them in the wild is what we're trying to do. Some of the stuff that we're working on right now that I'm so excited about is, you know, over the years, we've seen that people have decided it's cruel to wear fur. And so the fur industry is, no pun intended, but the fur industry is dead.
Yeah.
And people have figured out that beating animals and shocking them to make them do tricks is cruel. And so the circus industry with big animals or wild animals is dead. And there's been this last holdout, which are zoos. And I think it's because probably all of us went to the zoo with a grandparent or a parent. And so if we look at that and say, this is cruel and evil and bad, then it says my family was bad for participating in it. And so people don't want to do that. And they'll just close their minds to what that message really is. If you think about it, these animals are in cages and being annoyed by people coming and yelling and spitting and throwing things at them all day long. And then with the big cats, they get locked up at night in these little jail cells because it's cheaper to do that than to have security out when the cats are most active, which is at night.
Right.
And so the message that we're teaching our children when we take them to the zoo is to say, we can steal their habitat in the wild. We can take away everything that was their birthright. And we can come see this animal in this cage anytime we want to, as long as it amuses you. And that is so wrong. It just gets us all off to a bad start as to understanding where our place in nature is. And I think it's where how we got to where we are now with COVID. You know, if we respected nature, we wouldn't be locked in our rooms right now by Mother Nature. So the last holdout is the zoos. And we felt like I can't just tell the zoos you need to go away. They're going to do that. They're in a business. So what could we show them that would be far more profitable, more educational, more entertaining than having animals languishing in cages? And that's why we've spent the last several years working on virtual reality and augmented reality. And some of the most exciting parts of this, I think, in the future are, and I was just talking to a fellow from India this morning, I said, imagine in India where you have these tigers and they have ecotourism there, but people will come in jeeps and they follow the cats around and they all come crashing in around the cat. So the cat can't hunt, it can't do anything normal. And it's making the cats more accustomed to people so that more people are being injured, which means more tigers get killed. I said, what if you just were to put remote controlled internet streaming cameras everywhere out there that you know tigers are? And you hire the local people to make sure those cameras are continuing to operate the way they should. There's ads on them like you would have on YouTube videos that are generating income to pay those people. And then the local villages all share in a profit sharing scheme so that they have an incentive to protect that forest, to make sure there's plenty of prey animals there so that there can be predators like tigers that walk in front of these cameras. And for the rest of the world, imagine anytime you come home from a long day and you just had it and you want to put on your headset and you're transported to the Himalayas and you can see these magnificent snow leopards racing through the environment, chasing their prey and doing everything that comes natural. That's a much more entertaining and educating way to see these animals. And not everybody can afford a $500 headset. So that's where zoos fit in. They can create these location-based experiences where people, you come into the room where they have the headsets for you, you pay your $10 to come in that day. But in addition to putting this on, if you're in the snowy Himalayan mountains, you've also got all this cold air blowing at you and you've got this full feeling of being totally immersed in that cat's world. I think people would sign up for that. I know kids love that a whole lot more than seeing an animal in a cage. And so I think that's where our future lies. And it's only when we do that everywhere and protect all of that habitat that we have fresh air to breathe and clean water to drink.
Right. And I think tech is the way of the future anyway. So, and if you can see an animal in its natural habitat, it's more enjoyable. I mean, like I was in Thailand and I am guilty. I went to a tiger park And it was one of the most devastating things I've ever seen. They were absolutely sedated. They were not in their natural form or habitat, obviously. And it was like, why are we here? Why are we paying to support this situation? This is not good. I want to cry right now just seeing these animals. And you're not even getting a real experience. So it doesn't make sense. It's really strange. And so the other thing from that was that they had the babies and that you can pet the babies and play with the babies. And so you have something that is a big initiative of yours that's all about why you need to stop petting babies and the harm that it does there. So are you trying to create like a petition where people sign that and make it like illegal for that to happen? What's your initiative with that?
We currently have a federal bill that's before Congress right now. It's called the Big Cat Public Safety Act. And there are 165 members of the House who have signed on as co-sponsors, which is their way of signaling to the rest of the House that when this comes to the floor for a vote, I'm already telling you I'm going to vote for it. So 165 have signed on. We have a few more signing on every day. And then just last week, we actually introduced the Senate version because you have to have one in the House and one in the Senate. We have been doing this since 1998 or 1999. We had a partial win in 2003, but there were some loopholes in it. And so what we've been doing since 2003 is trying to close those loopholes. The one silver lining out of Tiger King is that people know about this and people do not want these animals treated the way they saw in Tiger King. And I think that's going to push this bill through this year.
Wow. And I was just going to say, I mean, so incredible. I would love to also drop that link to the petition. If you know, can people still get involved in signing this petition?
There's two links. One is cubtruth.com. And if people go to that page and they don't know anything about this world, there are three very short videos there that they can watch that will make them experts. And then at the end, it says, do you want to help? And at the end, it will take them to this other page, which is bigcatact.com. And what we do there is we have given people a little script they can say if they call their member of Congress, and we actually know from their zip code who their member is, and we'll actually dial that for them.
Wow.
We have an email that they can send, which is what most people want to do. It's just not as effective as calling. And you can also send a tweet out to your senator. It will know from your address who your senator or your representative is. And we have it all pre-filled so that you can change it if you want, but you don't have to. You don't have to be an expert on it.
Right.
And it's because of so many people, literally hundreds of thousands of people, reaching out to their members of Congress through these forums that have enabled us to get as far as we have.
Right. So it's more, there are a few silver linings to Tiger King because there's that, you know, so the people who really watched it and didn't just look at it as entertainment and they understand more of what you're doing. They want to support you and your initiative. They're obviously being attracted to this, right? But you were also on Dancing with the Stars, weren't you?
Was.
That was pretty cool. What was that like?
Right after Tiger King came out, we had something like 300 media outlets reach out to us. And
wow.
We had never been burned by a producer before. We always opened up our homes and our sanctuary to everybody for free. Any kind of project they were working on, if they were trying to save big cats, we were there for them.
Right.
And so nobody had ever done something evil with that before.
Right.
And we were just so betrayed that we didn't talk to anybody for a while. And my daughter was looking at the list of media and she said, well, you have to do Jimmy Fallon because I just love him. And you have to do Dancing with the Stars because I love that show. I had never seen the show. And I had heard of Jimmy Fallon, but I'd never seen his show either. And so I followed up on Jimmy Fallon first. And it turned out to be a couple of kids in the UK that were playing this really elaborate prank on me that turned out to be so funny. And the good news was it got 7 million views and they let me talk about the big cat issues the whole time. So it was like, well, that was all good.
Right. You're using it for the right reasons. I mean, why not? That's what publicity, if you're using it for the right cause, that's all it is then.
Yeah. I really believe that no press is bad press.
Right. Right. We'll go with that here. Absolutely. Absolutely. So Dancing with the Stars is just another outlet for everyone to know who you are.
Well, that's what my daughter and my husband wanted. And I didn't believe after the Jimmy Fallon thing, I didn't believe that somebody by the name of Dina Katz was really somebody from Dancing with the Stars. So it took her a while to convince me she is a real person. And turns out she is a lovely person. We've become good friends. But she sold me on the idea by saying, look, this, as long as you can stay in this competition, and she assured me that our dance pros could, or their dance pros could teach me how to dance because I had never danced a step in my life.
Right.
And she said, as long as you can stay in the competition, then you can talk about big cats all you want. And there's all of this press that we get together for these radio tours and TV tours and print tours. And you can talk about cats to your heart's content. And so I was all about doing that.
That's great. And
I thought, how hard could it be, right? That was the hardest thing I ever did in my life.
I'm sure. Very challenging, but it's worth it.
Yes, it was. Those people were so nice. Everybody there was so nice. And they gave me so many opportunities that I would not have been able to get otherwise. And I think as people have seen that I'm really focused on ending the problem and that I really care about saving the tiger in the wild and that I don't want to have a bunch of cats in cages.
Right.
That sanctuaries and zoos aren't the same. You know, as people are starting to see those things, then they may come away with a different opinion of me, but it really doesn't matter what people think of me because it's not about me. It's about saving the tiger before we all lose the tiger.
Right. And I really think you are such the prime example of what everyone is going through right now. Like, you know, we're in this really weird time and it's a little bit off topic, but I'd like to talk about social media and like the value there. And I feel like there are so many old school people that just don't understand. You know, we're involved in a lot of different charities. They don't get why they need visibility. You know, so you have this moment where you're a part of the show. You're basically, you were stooped. You were tricked into this situation, but it ends up being in your favor because I think long term, we all come to our senses. You know, so as you said, you know, no press is bad press, really. So this was a pretty devastating thing. I'm sure it was very difficult for you while it was happening. And I would imagine that you got a lot of negative people coming to you. I mean, I'm sure that was difficult. I'd love to ask you about that. But I think that the reality is that people appreciate what you're doing and they support you. And now we're on our way out of this negative zone. And your buddy Joe Exotic is more just like an entertainer now. I don't know that he's getting a lot of support in terms of his operation. Is he in jail? Do you know?
Yes, he's in jail for the next 20 years. He was sentenced to 22 years, but he's been there for 2 years now.
Wow.
And almost all of the other characters that you saw in Tiger King are now facing similar prosecution.
That's
Jeff Lowe. His partner down in Thackerville has the Department of Justice suing him and PETA suing him. And they've already taken away all of his cubs under a year old and their mothers because he has proven to them, they believe that he's incapable of providing proper food and nutrition for them because they end up with all of these metabolic bone diseases.
How is it that they're going to have a season two then? Will it just be all about him in jail? And I mean, that sounds terrible. I don't want to watch that. How about we get you a season two?
Actually, we're working on a program. We're still in the negotiation part of the contract, but we're actually already filming, even though we haven't got
that
the contract nailed.
Great, though. That would be a wonderful show to watch. I would love to see, you know, the behind the scenes of everything you're doing. That's very cool.
Thank you.
Well, so, and I'll go back and I wouldn't want to talk about it long, but did you have a lot of negative people reaching out to you? Like how did that go for you?
As soon as Tiger King ended, my husband and I sat there on the couch looking at each other, just gobsmacked and said, well, that was a missed opportunity. And then my phone started ringing and it rang like every 2 minutes for 3 months straight. And it was just person after person after person screaming obscenities and how they wanted to kill me and they wanted to kill my family and they wanted to kill the cats. I have recorded something like 10 hours of those just unbelievably hateful, vicious calls.
Wow.
And for 3 months. What I do in my real world life here is anytime a bobcat gets hit by a car, it's usually 2 o'clock in the morning when that happens. The people will call me and then I have to rush out there with my daughter and we rescue the cat, and get it the vet care it needs and then put it back in the wild. I couldn't do that for 3 months because people, and my daughter couldn't either because she was having the same problem. And those cats were dying out there because they couldn't get a hold of anybody for help because people were just so intent on being cruel based on watching a TV show. That just blew my mind that people would believe a TV show that was so outrageously stupid to begin with.
Right.
Why on earth they would believe that narrative just blew my mind.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that we're seeing an end there because I've seen there's some, is it organizations that are using your facility to also attract attention for their own initiatives? I think I saw something like a car company and another big cat foundation was going to be using your sanctuary for a big event.
Actually, no, it's not going to be here. What we're doing is helping another sanctuary be built. Chidsey's Wildcat Sanctuary in North Carolina. And he's been really studying to try and do it right. And we want to help him do it right. And so he's having a big event out at his new facility. And it is the Ferrari dealer that is backing him up. And they recently visited Big Cat Rescue because they wanted to see how is a sanctuary done right,
right,
as a model for what they're doing there. But the June event will actually be in North Carolina at Chidsey's place.
That's great. And I just think that what's happening is the right people are trying to support you and they want to be involved in your initiative. So I hope that the negativity ends and I'd love to see your show. What can people do to, other than signing the petition, what can people do to support you and what you're doing?
Our website is over 10,000 pages. So if they go to bigcatrescue.org, they will find everything that we're doing there. And on all of the social channels, follow Big Cat Rescue. A lot of people have been wanting to follow me because they've seen me in Clubhouse and that sort of thing. But I am no good at doing social media. Yeah. And our people at Big Cat Rescue are fabulous. There's over 200 people that are answering questions in real time and getting you right on board with everything that we're doing. We have live walkabouts every day where people can see the cats through the videos that we share on Facebook and Instagram. We put out 2 new videos every week on YouTube. They can see us in headsets. We have a new game called Big Cat Rescue VR if you have a headset. And you can get it from Oculus or from Steam. There's so many ways to engage with the big cats and find out more about protecting them.
Well, that's awesome. And I appreciate your time. It's been an honor to share your story and it will be. So thank you. Thank you for everything that you do.
Well, thank you, Stephanie.